honestly say, these are the things that are important to me. So that is my puzzle. And how best can I be given all these variables? But if you see your task as, how best can I be if I was professional and that's all I did, that's not reality.
This is Running for Real, the podcast for runners who know that for every runner's high, there are just as many lows. All those just missed PRs, easy runs that feel hard, injury blues, and more. Each week, we'll talk to running, health, and wellness experts about their highs, lows, and best advice to build our confidence. Running for Real is about being honest, being brave, and most of all, not feeling alone. And now here's our host, Tina Muir.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to episode 132 of the Running for Real podcast. Thank you so much for being here today. Last week, we had Sally Gunnell on the show. She's one of my favorite role models, very real, and the only British female to have won Olympic, World, European, and Commonwealth titles. We talked about the state of the sport, what she did when she knew other runners around her could have been doping, and how she's adjusted to life after being that good at your sport. It was a really interesting episode, and I hope you enjoyed it. Today, we have a fellow superstar, and he recently became the editor-in-chief of Podium Runner, which you may know as formerly would have been Competitor magazine. And he's also an author of many of your favorite books. Now, this is a bit of a shorter episode, but I wanted to talk about the running industry, kind of thoughts on what it looks like right now. We can look at the recreational to elite level and see how things have changed and what happened with Competitor magazine and how's the running media going to survive. Before we get to this episode with Jonathan Beverley, I'm really excited for you to meet him. If you haven't already heard from him in the mental training series of my podcast, before we get there, I just want to send a big thank you out to Tribe, which is a British brand. For those of you who are British, you finally get a product you can hear about. Tribe, Athletic Greens, and Body Health. So let's go meet one of them and get to the episode. Thank you to Athletic Greens for sponsoring this episode of the Running for Real podcast. Athletic Greens is the ultimate daily all-in-one supplement that comes in a tasty green powder. You know how green powders usually taste like you are just drinking a whole bowl of dirt? This definitely does not taste like that. Of course, it doesn't taste like you are drinking cranberry juice from the supermarket, but it is going to taste good. I love the taste of it. It's a slight apple-y taste, and I just love knowing that I'm getting 75 proven vitamins, minerals, and whole food source ingredients, or 12 servings of fruit and vegetables before I even wake up myself properly in the morning. I just mix it with 14 ounces of water. Let's give it a stir and then off I go. That's me for the rest of the day. I really feel confident that it's covering those five critical areas of health, and you can just know that your body is being looked after, even if your diet isn't absolutely perfect. Those of you who have tried Athletic Greens based on my recommendations so far have been loving it, and I have really enjoyed seeing that. It's made me so happy. I just took the travel packs with me on my vacation to England, and it made it nice and easy. And you can get 20 servings of Athletic Greens as a travel pack that's valued at $79 with your first order. Those travel packs are perfect for summer vacations. You know, when we go on vacation, we tend to let our diet slip a little bit, but this way, at least you know, no matter what you're eating or drinking, you can be making sure you are getting those 75 whole sourced ingredients. You are going to be getting probiotics and prebiotics, digestive enzymes. It covers it all. Go to athleticgreens.com/Tina to get yourself a free travel pack worth $79 with your first order. That is athleticgreens.com/Tina. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining me on the Running for Real podcast. This is your first time on this official podcast, but I have had you on the mental training series, which is a little bit different. But thank you for being here today.
It's very much my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, for those listening who don't know who Jonathan is, he is much loved by many in the Running for Real Superstars community, but just in the community as a whole, you know, you get all the love and showered by affection by so many people, and it's just been really cool to see it. And since we've last spoken, in person that is, you have become the editor-in-chief of Podium Runner. Now, for someone who is saying, what is Podium Runner? Maybe they've seen the words around in the last few months. Did that pop out of nowhere? Tell us, where did that come from?
Well, it sort of did pop out of nowhere. it was competitor run, if you remember, competitor that mm-hmm. was the print magazine and then became a website. And because of some back behind the scenes business stuff that no one needs to know about, we had to change the name. And so became Podium Runner at Boston this year in April.
Oh, okay.
So yes, I'm editor in chief of it. It is online only. And for people who know, you know, the history, it's probably going to be quite similar to what Running Times was, that it is for, it's for people who love running. I mean, I guess that's probably the best way to describe it. I think people tend to think, and Podium Runner has the, perhaps the problem of thinking it's only for the top three in each race.
I don't know about that. Yeah, I guess maybe initially people might see that, but then you're doing a good job of getting it out there to kind of show that it's across the board and has topics on all kinds of things. Now, you mentioned it being kind of similar to Running Times, which was where you were the editor-in-chief there as well, formerly, right?
I was for 16 years.
Yeah. What do you see doing different this time around to make sure that Podium Runner is able to kind of keep going, keep moving in the right direction? You know, where do you go from here?
I think that the transition from print to web was sticky for Running Times. Mm-hmm. But I think the main thing is, again, to emphasize this accessibility that it's not elitist at all. It's for anybody who wants to get better and for whom running is an end of itself, not a means to an end. Mm-hmm. You want to get better because you love it and you want to continue to do it well.
Mm-hmm. So why did you choose the name? I don't think you were the one behind the name, but why did they choose that name?
Mostly to be about, and the initials are PR, it's rather just to be clever, to be about the idea that it is for competitive runners. It is people who want to get better, who want to race, who want to be, it's not a health and fitness site. And it's an in-depth site. It's sort of maybe a graduate work, coursework, you know, rather than the 101 class. It's more of the 301 class in whatever the topic is, be that stretching or types of workouts or your mentality that you've been running for a while. And it is something that you have some knowledge and you want to get better.
Mm-hmm. And what about, you know, you mentioned Running Times had a bit of trouble moving from print to digital. Competitor, correct me if I'm wrong, was digital the last maybe 2 years, digital only. And so moving to this new kind of landscape of all digital, you know, our attention spans being so short, just the fact that people are getting a bit frustrated with kind of clickbait articles and things like that. What do you see kind of the future looking like to avoid a fate that many digital online media companies have kind of fallen into?
It's a really astute observation, somebody who's been in the industry. But I think there's a couple of things we're doing. One is we're creating what we call the well. And this is a collection of stories that comes out every 2 weeks on a topic. And so instead of, you know, again, the random daily clickbait or, you know, why I'm interested in this, that gives us a chance to almost be like a print magazine in that it's, you know, it's four stories, four a little bit longer, more in-depth, different angles on the same topic stories on a specific topic that we're putting out. And then we're promoting those with newsletters again. So you can get it in your, once a week, you get an email that has kind of a little magazine there. So it takes you again out of the daily news cycle it's interesting. I'm learning a lot about SEO now and some of those things, and social media and you know, things that I didn't come up learning because I was in print. And as you know, that, you know, SEO sort of means rather than saying three advanced stretches for your hip flexor, you say stretch better to run faster. And I'm hoping that we can have a middle ground there where, yes, we can have to do stuff so that search terms find it, but it also always communicates to the audience. There's more here than what you get on the 27 other places that have stretch to run faster.
Mm-hmm. And do you think people are craving more of this kind of long form content of, you know, in-depth articles rather than short, sweet things, or you know, what I said about our attention spans. What have you found?
I do. I think there is a solid core. I think there was, again, for running times, just in terms of the business model, but there are, you know, however the number is, 100,000, 150,000 people who, again, want to get better. And that number is growing. I think the new generation, I mean, look at Boston Marathon qualifying times go down every year. Mm-hmm. There is a generation of people who want to get better and want to do this well. And there's the joy of that. I mean, there's a little bit different focus. It's not quite the driven intensity that maybe there was in the 70s, 80s, but certainly people who want this. And we've been really well received, the wells that we've put out and the newsletter. The newsletter last week had like a 45% open rate, and right, the industry standards is like 17%. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've definitely heard that industry standards can be pretty low, and I'm sure we all know the feeling of getting one of those. I got one this morning. I can't remember what it said, but immediately I was like, unsubscribe, go away. And I think everyone has that feeling, but it's usually those kind of, like we talked about, clickbait kind of articles. And I just want you to explain, I don't know if Podium Runner ever intends to do this, but because you are in the industry and you understand it, there's been quite a lot of frustration about a paywall for articles to certain running websites, but also other websites just in general. Can you explain maybe to someone who doesn't understand, what would be the reason for that? And, you know, is it necessarily always a bad thing if a website does put some of their stuff behind a paywall?
Loaded question. Mm. The reason is twofold. One is to have some income, you know, from a subscriber base that we used to have. And then second is to have a subscriber list to know who they are and to be able to both make content for them, so you have more information about them, and to use it for advertising to say, okay, we have this number of people, but these are, you know, the core people, and they're buying three pairs of shoes a year and they're running 40 miles a week or mm-hmm. whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so to have that database. As far as I think there are good reasons not to have a paywall. I guess I think there's best is to have a mixture of both. You have some free content and then very advanced content or specific, like you have done, mm-hmm. a package that you say, okay, you have to pay to get this. Mm-hmm.
And I think something I want to remind people listening, particularly when it comes to online, you know, websites like Podium Runner, although you don't have anything, any of your articles behind a paywall rate yet.
No.
You know, it is something to understand that, like Jonathan said, it is bringing in an income, but maybe kind of take into account that the fact that if these media companies don't find some way of making money, they can't pay someone like Jonathan to be their editor in chief, which means there are no articles that come out, which means you don't get the helpful information in the first place. And because they can't pay writers to write these articles and things like that. So I know it can be frustrating, but I just want to kind of give a bit of a shout out, as many of my friends are freelance writers and it's their only source of income. So, you know, just, I know it can be frustrating, and, you know, sometimes I know there's one website, which everyone is probably thinking of, that you can look at five within a month, which, okay, maybe that could be expanded a little bit, but at the same time, they have to survive as well. And if they're going to survive and that's their way of doing it, then, you know, everyone has to kind of find a way to make a living. So anything you'd add to that?
No, except that, you know, as far as part of our strategy is to keep pretty low overhead. And so I'm doing most of it. Mm-hmm. And then we're trying to, I think it's good for the consumer too. We're trying to use a lot of people, like athletes submitting their training logs, and experts in the field, rather than hiring a writer to interview an expert, get the expert to write it and I'll clean it up. Some of those things. But I don't think it hurts the content, but it is a way to survive in this environment.
Thank you to Tribe for sponsoring this episode of the Running For Real podcast. Tribe is the UK's leading all-natural sports nutrition brand, and they have over 20 natural energy and recovery products with ingredients you will know. If you go look at the ingredients list on the website or on one of the back of their bars, you will soon see that there's nothing fishy in this. It's all, and I don't mean fishy literally, I just mean suspicious. There's nothing in this. It's all just healthy, safe, nutritionally dense stuff. I feel really good about it. I love the taste of them, and I think you are going to too. Now, I wanted to tell you a bit more about Tribe as a whole. They were designed by ultra runners and leading nutritionists who wanted to provide optimal performance nutrition because they were not happy with what was available on the market. The three founders, Tom, Rob, and Guy, started Tribe in 2015. After a 1,000-mile run across Eastern Europe, they were frustrated with what was out there, and so they decided to create their own, and it's just gone very well. It's not just me and the customers that also think that. They were rated 9.7 out of 10, which is an excellent on Trustpilot. Now, Tribe products are make sure you have a source of protein. They have slow-release carbs. They're high in fiber. They have minerals to support energy. All the things you need as a runner. They have protein bars. They have protein shakes. They have energy bars. They have boxes that contain lots of different products if you want to try out a few things. And all of the ones I have tried, I love. They taste delicious. And I think you are really going to enjoy them. If you use promo code TINAMUA, you can get your first box for £2 when you subscribe to Tribe. So head to weartribe.co/TinaMuir to claim your offer. That's weartribe.co, and you can use code TinaMuir to get your first box for £2. That's such a good deal. Be sure to go check out their Instagram stories and my Instagram stories to go find out more about Tribe stories and their products.
Part of our strategy is to keep pretty low overhead. And so I'm doing most of it. And then we're trying to, I think it's good for the consumer too. We're trying to use a lot of people, like athletes submitting their training logs, and experts in the field, rather than hiring a writer to interview an expert, get the expert to write it and I'll clean it up. Mm-hmm. Some of those things. But I don't think it hurts the content, but it is a way to survive in this environment. Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about the running industry a little bit. As you have had, how many years have you been working in the running industry now?
Total. Since 2000.
Okay. So that's 19 years total.
Yes.
And so you got into running times pretty much immediately then?
No, it started in 1977, but it wasn't very big.
Well, I mean, immediately as soon as you came into the running industry.
I did. I mean, yeah. Okay. Actually, if you want to say when I started, my first freelance articles were like 394 around there.
Okay.
So I was a freelancer, but I, at the time I was actually director of international programs at NYU. I was freelancing just for fun because I loved the sport and I was coaching and I liked writing. So yes, perhaps you could say 25 years.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll go with that. So you've been, you know, around this industry, love this industry. You've written 2 books on the topic, and I did interview you about Run Strong, Stay Hungry last year, but let's talk about the running industry in general. So maybe we could start with the elite level. You mentioned some of them have been submitting training logs, things like that. Firstly, on that topic, do you feel that things have changed in that way a lot, that people are okay with submitting workouts they're doing, with submitting their training, kind of admitting things that they're going through, whereas maybe before elites were kind of put on this pedestal of where they very much kept themselves to themselves and then just appeared at the top, you know, on race day? What have you noticed?
I think two things. One, because of the technology, that we're much more able to see that. I mean, even and I don't know when he wrote it, but Michael Sandrock wrote Running with the Legends, which had a lot of very detailed information about how people train. But a book, as you know, is a 2-year process or so, and then you have to buy the book. Whereas now, you know, Jared Ward sends it to me and I put it up and you see it the next day. But I do think, yes, there is, because, I mean, perhaps who knows which one started which, but because of the technology, people are aware. Yes, it's all open. It's all open book. The secret is not in the training. It's in the person, and they're willing to train. It's not like, oh, I have the secret workout that nobody else knows, and if I give it to you, you're going to do it and you're going to beat me. I don't think anybody feels that way, except for a few. There's a few athletes.
See, I almost feel like about 10 years ago, it was kind of that way. Like everyone kept this stuff very close to their chest, didn't want to really say anything, at least what I experienced. And now people are very willing to kind of show their vulnerability and weakness. Have you seen that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And who are some of your favorite people that you enjoy following and learning from in that way?
Well, some of those who have done it for us, I mean, Dathan Ritzenheim has been an open book, and also very insightful and eloquent about it and describing how it works and how it fits in. Jared Ward, Scott Fauble, Lindsay Flanagan, who was ninth at Boston this year, quite a few. It's interesting that mostly it's marathoners. I've been trying to do with track people what I did with the Boston Marathon. I've had four or five people, and I've had two people turn me down, and two people not respond. So perhaps it hasn't changed for track people. There's still an insular, I'm coached by this person, and he doesn't give away his workouts unless you sign up and go run for him.
Yeah. And so you mentioned about what you did for Boston Marathon. Who, if someone doesn't know what you're talking about, what did you do there?
Yes. Well, those three plus Becky Ward did a week. So like 5 weeks out from the Boston Marathon, and here's every mile I did. So, from the recovery miles and the weight training and the, and Becky Ward had everything she ate as well. It was very insightful just to hear it is exactly. And it's one thing I've always liked to do is to do exactly talking about vulnerability and authenticity. This is what I did this week, not my ideal week, but what I actually did. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it says, I just came off a race. So it's, it wasn't 110 miles. It was 85 miles, or I was recovering from something, or as you're runner for real. Right.
Yeah. And real, what
not really ideal.
Yeah. What stood out to you from reading that training? Was it more than you expected? What things for anyone listening who is a recreational runner, you getting to see this, if they haven't seen it themselves, what stood out?
The volume was as reported, but it was interesting to see how that volume's made up. I mean, their long runs are about the same as a 40-mile week runner does, but they're getting 110 miles a week because they're getting out there every single day and doing 10, 15 miles. And like Lindsay Flanagan was doing them on hills, even her recovery days. And so I guess I felt the workouts weren't as impressive as you might expect, but the total volume, the day after day. And I think that's one thing we all can learn. Mm-hmm. Consistency is perhaps more important than intensity. Yeah.
And if you had the opportunity, if someone could insert you into one of those bodies, would you mentally want to take that situation? Would you want that?
Absolutely. No question. I think so. When it becomes professional, as you've written about and talked about, as soon as it becomes what you do, I mean, this is trouble with all passions, right? Is that it becomes your livelihood. So then it gets twisted a bit.
So do you think that's what I'm asking you? Do you think you could handle it mentally if that was it? Cause I have already said I couldn't, and I would love to hear listeners, you guys listening out there. What do you think? Could you handle it? I couldn't. What about you, Jonathan?
Right.
Mentally.
I don't know if I could, but I don't think I'd want to. I've said multiple times that I was blessed to not being very good at it. I love running, but I'm not very good at it. Because I never had to face that question.
Mm-hmm. I would love to hear anyone listening. If you want to share with us, maybe within the Superstars community, Jonathan is in there as well. So we can all chat about it and just see what people think. All right. What about going into 2020 with the Olympics as you get to kind of have a glimpse of what's going on? How are you feeling about the American team and what this trials is going to be like? I'm assuming you guys are going to be down there writing about it, experiencing it.
Right. Yeah. As far as I know, and I hope to, it's too far out to have booked any tickets, but I've been at the last trials since 2004. I've been at every trials and I love the marathon trials. Track trials I've not, but we'll see. But how I'm feeling, the marathon seems to be sort of the focus. And obviously it seems like we're stronger than ever, top tens and world marathon majors, particularly the women, but we saw Boston, there's some very strong young men coming up that can compete. And then, it seems to be getting more and more cleaned up at the top too. Mm-hmm. Which gives more chances.
So on that note, do feel good about the situation of, you mentioned cleaning up a bit. It's easy to kind of see it both ways, with feeling that it is getting better, but then, one week after the next, we hear about someone who has been caught, you know, years later. So based on what you're seeing, what are you thinking about that as well?
Well, every time there's somebody caught, my first reaction is just sort of depression. And it's just sad because these are heroes. These are people that we admire and we want to admire. And then also it casts doubt on the whole sport, and it makes you feel discouraged. But again, if it's week after week, eventually it feels like it's thinned out, at least. I mean, if some people can slip through, it's going to be a lot fewer than in the past. It's not going to be top 10, perhaps here and there, but it does feel to me that the systems with the, you know, like the passport system is working.
I hope so. We will find out, I guess. Yes. Okay. What about at the, you know, recreational, at the base level here? You know, we're seeing, as you mentioned, more and more participation, but also people wanting to be faster regardless of what level they're at, which is, you know, great. But then we're also seeing a lot of people expanding out into more and more challenging things, maybe trying to be part of a few, you know, obstacle races. But, you know, that was something initially, and now that's very popular. Then people started moving over to ultras and trails. Now those are popular, and meet people getting more and more extreme with kind of what they're doing. So tell us some thoughts on what you're seeing within the industry when it comes to everyone else except the elites.
It seems to me that running is as strong as it's ever been. And I do think there is, as I said, a U curve of, it was a few people that were really fast and you had to run 3-hour marathon, and then it went totally popular. You know, and there's a reaction to that it doesn't matter how fast you go, and it's all just fun runs. And in fact, you make fun of that guy who shows up at a race and is intense, you know. And I think now this swing back of people have always need a challenge, always need something worth living for. And that's what I felt. Yeah, again, that a site like Podium Runner sort of gives you is not life is so overwhelming, I need a quick fix so I don't get fat, but I want something that I can put myself into and is going to give me a purpose to get up in the morning and a reason not to drink too much at night and to have a better diet. You know, all these things are kind of a side effect towards the goal of being a better runner and enjoying running more and being healthier and being stronger. And I think now more than ever, disillusionment in the political sphere or economically, a lot of people having, you know, troubles now, to have something you can control, have something that there seems to be a direct reward for the effort you put into it is as important as it's ever been.
Mm-hmm. And related to that, so I wrote an article for Podium Runner a few months ago about how it is possible to kind of enjoy yourself, have fun, while also trying hard. Now, when I mentioned this to you, you immediately were like, yep, you know, I get this. I've been there. I'm still there. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that topic in particular, because I think many of the listeners are kind of in that boat, that maybe PRs are behind them. Maybe life is just a bit too hectic to allow for, you know, really going for a goal at this point. So how has that come into play in your life, you know, running for fun and working hard?
It's probably the topic I'm most focused on right now in terms of my life and in terms of understanding, because like I said, I've always been the type of person. I mean, what I loved about marathoning and road racing in general was at times when I was sort of underemployed, this was something I put myself into. So you go up, you know, you go to work and you put your hours in, and then you go home and you run and that's what you love. And what you love about it is that it does take over your life, and that it's the most important thing. Then I think, as you can attest, having a child is probably the biggest change in your life. But that's probably where I had a son who's just graduated now from high school. So life's going to be different. But for the last 18 years, he has been the most important thing in my life. And it took a long time to sort of realize that is not only, it's not counterintuitive to my running. As you said, I still care about the running and I still like to race and I still want to be the best I can be. But the best I can be is not just limited by my genetics and my leg speed. but by what time commitment I have right now, how much effort can I put into this while keeping other very, very important things in my life. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the decision making that people have to decide, is honestly say, okay, these are the things that are important to me. So that is my puzzle. And how best can I be given all these variables? And that variable then includes age. But if you see your task as how best can I be giving these variables, not, okay, how best can I be if I was professional and it's all I did, mm-hmm. but that's not reality. That's just saying, all right, well, how best could I be if I was Eliud Kipchoge? It's just ridiculous to think that way. Yeah. Well, a lot of us do. It sort of resent everything that keeps me from being, you know, to putting myself into this and, you know, doing my long run at the same time every weekend or yeah, whatever, saying, no, that's part of the puzzle. So then how best I can be. And there's still a joy in that best. In fact, sometimes probably, I think, more joy because there's more complexity, actually. You know, the problem solving is, you know, I turned 55 in April. What's the best I can be with a 55-year-old body is more complex than what was the best I can be with a 35-year-old body, because I learned it at 26 and it stayed the same till about 40. And now it's different every 3 months, I feel like.
And how have you managed to find peace with that?
Well, one thing, you have no choice. Either you give it up, you give it up, or you find peace. But I think honesty is that's mm-hmm. the key of realizing, okay, where does the joy come from? It's not in running, you know, a 2:45 marathon. It's in doing the best, getting better, seeing myself get better, set goals, achieving them, and in the running itself. The other thing is, you know, just getting older, you start getting injured because you're not taking into account that things have changed. Or I mean, even with time commitments, the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're only running 25 miles a week and your long run is still 15 and 20 miles, you're going to get hurt, you know, in terms of the percent. But people do it. Sort of, you're in denial that this is where your life is now. So brutal honesty with where your life is, and then honest assessment of where, what running means to you and what's important, you know. And in the end, for me, it's being able to get out almost any day I want and run, you know, comfortably for 30 minutes to an hour is the ultimate importance. And then as I have more time and effort, setting goals upon that and going from there.
Thank you to Body Health for sponsoring this episode of the Running For Real podcast. Now, you have heard me talking about Body Health for years now, and there is a reason for that, because they are a good friend to me. They will be a good friend to you in that they will help you no matter what stage you are in your life. If you are training hard for a race, ideal for you. It's going to help you recover, help keep those injuries away. If you are just kind of running just for the enjoyment of it, it's still going to help you with those tough days. And chances are, if you are in that stage, you could be at a point where some other thing is stressing you out in your life and you don't have the time or the energy to be dealing with other things. Body Health will help you take care of that, especially if life is hectic, because sometimes we can miss meals after we have our runs, not because we're meaning to, but just because we have a lot of stuff to get done and finding food, it's not always the easiest thing to do. So in that situation, Body Health can help you. Well, if you are pregnant, Body Health is going to be good for you as well, help you recover from just, you know, the stresses of growing a small child. Same goes for breastfeeding. Perfect Amino is a wonderful product to use no matter what stage you are in. It contains the 8 essential amino acids that the body needs. And those essential amino acids are in the exact proportion needed for maximum utilization. If you haven't already tried it, I don't know why. I've been telling you about it for years and it is absolutely a wonderful product. There is 100% money back guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to tinamuir.com/aminos. That's tinamuir.com/aminos. And go get yourself 10% off the entire website, including Perfect Amino.
If you're only running 25 miles a week and your long run is still 15 and 20 miles, you're going to get hurt, you know, in terms of the percent. But people do it. It's sort of, you're in denial that this is where your life is now. So brutal honesty with where your life is, and then honest assessment of where, what running means to you and what's important, you know. And in the end, for me, it's being able to get out almost any day I want and run, you know, comfortably for 30 minutes to an hour is the ultimate importance. And then as I have more time and effort, setting goals upon that and going from there.
You mentioned setting goals there a few times. You know, I personally found it quite difficult. Maybe that's just coming from my background of, you know, giving it everything and really honing in on things I wanted to achieve, to go to kind of just doing it, like you said, as for fun. But I didn't really find setting any goals was, for me, helpful. But for you or anyone else listening, what would you be your advice on setting a goal during this period of your life where running isn't the priority?
Again, very insightful question. And I was thinking about this actually on my lunch run before this. I think that expectations can be really, really dangerous, I guess. And that's I think what you're saying is that the goals often are based on again, a different time in your life or a different person and different. So yes, I do think that the goals have to be much more open-ended, process goals as far as saying, okay, I want to be fit enough to run a marathon or fit in, you know, I want to run most days and I want to run long some days and want to run fast some days. So much more open-ended goals and then let your body dictate where you are. Mm-hmm. Again, as you wrote so eloquently in Podium Running, you got to go to see Tina's story.
I'll put a link, don't worry, in the show notes.
Showing up at the Boston Marathon and realizing that I still want to run really hard today. I want to give the same effort or more effort, it sounds like, than perhaps you did as an elite. but given the body I have today, not the one I could have ideally in some ideal world, that would not have some very important things in your life that are mm-hmm. as important or more important.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that is kind of, the point I was bringing home, that, as you said, expectations are very dangerous. Putting pressure on yourself is very dangerous. And I see so much of it, putting pressure on themselves. And I just feel like the kind of people who are reading Podium Runner are going to be those people who, you know, I have a life, I have a family, I have all these things going on in my life, but I still really want my running goal. So for runners who do kind of find themselves putting a lot of pressure on and expectation, you know, throughout your years of learning about runners and just through what the elites have taught you and everything, what would you like to say to people who feel that they are a bit guilty of putting pressure on when it comes to setting goals and big races?
Again, I think brutal honesty with where am I now? Not where I think I could be, you know, not some illusion of 110%, you know, that I could pull out something that I haven't done. Being honest with sort of where I could be and then being grateful for where I am, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, I could not be able to run at all. I'm actually here today, you know, at my age today, given my life right now, and able to do this. So gratitude for whatever happens. And then honesty with saying, okay, I want to push myself hard, mm-hmm. but whatever. Okay. Andy Palmer. His name sounds familiar to you. He was a writer for Running Times when I first started.
He ran main
running camps. But he wrote an article and he said, you know, the right mindset for races, it should be the most important thing in your life at the moment, but you can't care about the outcome, which I think is the perfect thing. Is that
not so easy to do, though?
Not so easy. It's a split personality thing that it's okay. So this is most important that I'm going to do the best I can. You know, I want the last effective step to be the finish line, but whatever that comes as, whatever the outcome is, I'll be good with that. So the goal is the effort, not the result. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to something like a Boston qualifier or things, then that's a more difficult. Yeah, you succeed or you fail.
Yeah.
So I think you know, those have to be another thing I learned. It was actually from a marriage counseling book, but it's been useful for writing and coaching writers, is to distinguish between dreams and goals. You know, So the dream is you got to qualify for Boston this year. Actually, I have a long-term dream next year. Do you want to hear it?
So yeah, sure.
The dream is next May will be the 40th anniversary of my first marathon. I was 16 years old, Maine Coast Marathon, which actually died and now has been revived. Mm. So next May, I want to go back to the Maine Coast Marathon. I was 16 years old. I ran a 3:23. Yeah. Oh. When I was 38, I ran a 2:46. So I'm hoping to go back 40 years later and run a 3:23 again, so, which is a stretch. It's going to be hard. So, but that's my dream. And that motivates me. And that's saying, okay, I've got to get my mileage up. I've got to get fit. I've got to, you know, do all the things necessary to get there. But then the goal is to do all those things. Yeah. The goal is the things I can control.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Not the goal isn't the time.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you could turn up to the race. No, I think that makes sense. You could turn up to the race and it could be howling 50-mile-an-hour winds and snow. And, you know, you'd have to be in three-hour shape to run that time. So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And that is one thing that people often don't take into account. Yes, it's unfortunate when bad weather hits or if something happens, you know, the day before your race. But at the end of the day, it's... this kind of the nature of our sport is that you have to kind of go with what happens. And some people, I'm sorry, I am one of them, tend to be particularly lucky. And maybe I've just jinxed myself now, but in all my past races, I was pretty lucky with weather. But some people, you know, it just happens to be that you seem to hit the bad weather. So we all just kind of have to roll with it.
I would say it's even more than just the race day weather. Is that the goal? You know, I think I have to hold it lightly. We all have to hold it lightly that, you know, if I discover in October that, you know, I'm going to have to take 2 weeks off because of a stress fracture, I'm not going to give up.
You could take it more than 2 weeks if you had a stress fracture.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I get
stress reaction. How about that? No, stress fracture is 8 weeks. And then, yeah, I guess, but yeah, then you have to hold it lightly and say, say, okay, then, you know, I want to go back 40 years later, whatever the time it is. Yeah. Just have to be accepted. I wrote a piece called Against the Wind for Runner's World and talking about, again, that idea of getting out. I live on the high plains of Western Nebraska. So the wind's always blowing and I kind of raged against it for about a decade until I realized it's going to blow. So go out and whatever that day is, to run what you can run against the wind, not try to ignore that it's there, which is what we're talking about here.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you so much. Okay. And finally, you know, for people who are listening to this and thinking, you know, I love this idea of Podium Runner. I'm really enjoying these articles. You know, tell us a bit more about that. You said they can sign up for the newsletter. This is once a week. So if they are interested in that, they can go sign up. You also have your book, Run Strong, Stay Hungry, which we talked about recently, and Finding Your Stride. That was the name of the other one, correct?
Your Best Stride.
Your Best Stride. Okay. So if you could tell us a bit about each of those, if people are interested in learning more.
Sure. So Run Strong, Stay Hungry is 9 keys to staying in the race, which is, again, what we're talking about here. So I interviewed over 50 people who had started as a teenager and are still competitive as masters, 50s, 60s, 70s, and then distilled out principles that were common among them. And as expected, a lot of what we talk about here is there. The interesting part was very few of them wanted to talk about their training. What they considered important was the psychology. How do you adapt? How do you get over the fact that in your mind, if you're not running a 7-minute mile, it's not worth running it, you know, those types of mental blocks of what's good and what's important and what's worthwhile, and adapt, which includes adapting your training, adapting what is it worth going out for a 2-mile run? Is it worth going out if you're running a 10-minute mile? Yeah. And then how do you take joy in it still when your 5K pace is slower than what your marathon pace was? Mm-hmm. At one point, mm-hmm. There were some good training principles as well. And again, related to what we've talked about here, three very quickly is
yeah, sure.
Consistency, you know, that you have to be consistent, but you have to have variety within that consistency. And then have sort of what ties those together is training by feel, is to learning what your body is. You talk about no watch, don't have to watch it. Don't let it dictate what you should do. Don't let some training plan dictate what you should do. I mean, and if you can master that, it solves almost all the problems we've talked about. If you can train by feel, because, you know, how much time should you recover? As much time as it takes. You know, it's not one day or 2 days. It's, you know, when is your body ready to go hard again? And your body will tell you that. And then how fast should you go? What a threshold pace feels like today, not what a threshold pace is supposed to be or what it was in 1994.
Yes.
So all of those things.
Yeah, I think those are very important, and you definitely don't have to tell me. As you know, I'm a big fan of that. Right. And for someone who's saying, okay, what you just said there, you said that if, you know, your body will tell you when it's ready to go hard again, but we've already talked about people who were kind of, yourself included, cramming runs in. I mean, you mentioned you ran during your lunch just before we talked, and I think that's a pretty common thing for people to do, is squeeze it in anywhere. So how do you work the balance there when you essentially don't know when you're going to feel good again? And it might be Tuesday, it might be Thursday, it might be Friday. So how do you handle that?
That's a good question. Again, I think it's adaptability. I think, you know, instead of saying I have to go Tuesday and meet the group at the track to do my intervals, if I'm feeling good on Wednesday and my lunch run, I'll throw in 6 3-minute surges and consider that the same workout. And to my body, it is the same workout. It doesn't, yeah. And it doesn't matter it probably is slower because I'm doing it on a dirt road on some hills as opposed to on the track. But yeah,
the body doesn't know still, the difference. Yeah.
It doesn't know the difference. So I guess, yeah, solidity, adaptability, willingness to do things, yeah, on the fly. Mm-hmm. But you still have to have that consistency, which does take discipline, especially in lives that we all have, of saying, okay, a lot of times when you feel like I can't run today, I'm too tired, it's more of a psychological tired than the physical tired. But if the default is, yeah, I'm going to run today, yeah, often it becomes not only doable, but a relief.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you for explaining that. All right. We've just got four more questions for you. The questions I ask everyone at the end. One piece of advice you'd like to give the listeners for life?
Cultivate the feeling that you get to run rather than you have to run. I think that's really at the core of that. Don't set up a false expectation that you have to be running a certain point, or you have to, your self-esteem is wrapped around this. The fact that the default for all of us is that we could be ill. You know, we could not be able to do this. So if you can cultivate the idea that, wow, I get to do this. And sometimes I get to run fast, and sometimes I get to run long, and sometimes I get to run hard, and sometimes I just get to run. But all of it is worth being grateful for.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. Thank you for the reminder. All right. One person you think we should follow on social media?
Tina Muir.
No, that's a cheat. No. I'm not letting you have that one. Give me someone else. They can, hopefully they're already following me, so that's not a new person.
Right. I'll say Desi Linden. She does Running for Real for sure.
She does. With her
social media.
This is fitness. Is that what she does, the hashtag?
Yes.
Fitness. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. How do you want to be remembered on this show?
As someone who doesn't have all the answers, but is trying to figure out how to get through it and still do this thing that we love.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Great. Thank you. And finally, do you want to share a Running for Real moment with us? You've got to have some running. If you're running in the plains of Nebraska, there's got to be, that's one in itself right there. But give us another one.
Well, I could give you the other morning. So Sunday morning, I got up very early and I was doing like a 14 miler, and I was decided I was going to try to hit it in under 2 hours. And about 12 miles in, I run with 3 dogs. Mm-hmm. They ran into a raccoon.
Oh dear.
Had a great big fight. So by the time, and I didn't want to get into the fight, but I, yeah.
So wait, all three of them were involved in this fight with a raccoon?
Yes. Oh, yes. Wow. Yes.
Jeez. So, didn't even get hurt.
They had scratches across their noses and yes, but.
And did the raccoon?
The raccoon eventually got away.
The raccoon wasn't bringing the fight. It was just.
It was like in the bushes and they caught it and it was going from bush to bush and farther in. And I'm just standing there on the side of the road. Get out there. And one dog comes and then I start running and try to get the rest of them. So anyway, by the time I got done, I certainly didn't hit any goal.
That's funny. But that is a good example of a process goal you mentioned earlier about little goals along the way. So you give us a true example of what you were talking about. All right, Jonathan, for anyone else listening, anything else you would like to say to the listeners, to the running world in general, before we part ways here and they go find you elsewhere?
No, it's been a pleasure, first of all. I always enjoy talking with you. I always enjoy your writing and your thinking. You have great perspectives. I'm grateful to the running community that I've been able to do. There's a book by Mark Helprin. It's actually a short story, but it's an entertainer that talks about that. He says a lot of people try to find what people want and then do just that. And he said, I've done what I wanted to do and I've been able to make a living at that for a long time. That's how I feel about it. Is I've just been able to focus on something I love and what I want to do and been able to make a living at that. And then that's because there are the people who share and appreciate the perspective.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you work hard and you are great at what you do. So you've definitely earned that position as editor-in-chief. Congratulations to you on behalf of that. And thank you so much for joining us. Yeah, love to talk to you and look forward to hearing what's next for Podium Runner and just following along in the future. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
My friends, if you have a minute and you could leave a review on your favorite podcast player, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Spotify, or whatever else podcast player you use to listen to this podcast, or if you would subscribe to this podcast, you will help me get out in front of new runners to make our tribe even bigger and even better. It might not seem like you as one person can make a difference, but really, it helps a lot. And it shows me you appreciate the hard work I put in for those. Thank you so much. What do you think? Did a lot of what Jonathan was saying speak to you? I thought it would, because a lot of you I know are in a similar place in your running lives as he is. Now, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the running industry, what you see in the media, what your thoughts on the elites are, and where you see running going. I really enjoy these kind of conversations, and I know you do too. Now, I wanted to give you a heads up about Patreon. You often hear that I get to ask the questions from my Patreon members, and you've heard those in other episodes, but I'm now offering bonuses for Patreon members, like elite runners giving you little clips of advice to put on your race day playlist. Imagine having Jared Ward in your ear at mile 16 telling you that although you have 10 miles to go, you can do this and this is why. Or maybe Sarah Crouch at 10K telling you to stay calm and keep yourself under control as you're going to crush this. I also have exclusive interviews with some of your favorite runners. This is a great way to support me. So go to patreon.com/runningforreal to sign up. And next week, I'm excited to have my in-person interview with Jenny Falconer, a British radio and TV presenter, possibly the most famous person I've had on the show. And other than maybe Dean Karnes, you should know of her, especially if you're British. She is a huge runner and a lovely person. I can't wait for you to hear it. So have a great week and I'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to the Running for Real podcast. Be sure to check out tinamuir.com for show notes and even more helpful running information.